Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, as medical science advances, there's an ever-increasing number of treatments that people can receive. And the same is true for veterinary medicine with a similar range of costs. Dr. Stephen Martin is a vet and a diplomat of the European College of Veterinary Surgeons. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Hey, Sean.
What do you mean? What does diplomat of the European College of Surgeons mean?
It's a professional qualification similar to what human doctors would go through to become a consultant. So after your standard veterinary training, we go through internships, residencies, and then sit board examinations to become a specialist. It's a protected title.
Right. Okay. And is this like a specialist in various areas of animal?
Yeah. So there wouldn't be the same degree of subspecialization you'll have in human medicine, but you can be a specialist in cardiology, surgery, internal medicine, radiology. So similar breakdowns across areas.
Right. So in Ireland, if you find out your dog has a heart problem, are mm-hmm. there specific vets who will deal with that?
Yeah, there's typically a three-tiered system. So you have your general practice vets, you have people who hold certificates that would be considered advanced practitioners, and then you have your kind of tertiary level of care, which is specialists. And as I said, that's kind of the protected title. So you have to have become a diplomat or achieved a certain qualification to be able to claim yourself as a specialist on the register.
Mm. So if your dog needs surgery, it wouldn't be usually the first vet you brought them to, your local vet, if you know what I mean. They would refer you, would they?
It depends on the complexity of the case. Your general practice vet will do a lot of surgery, typically lots of neutering, desexing surgeries that would be routinely done in general practice up to the more advanced things. And then as a specialist, there's about 10 of us working as small animal surgery specialists in the country across a few different practices. So we would take, I guess, the more challenging or the more complex cases or the cases that need more advanced equipment to get them to a successful outcome.
Yeah. If you get to that point, that's a situation where you better wish you had pet insurance.
Yes and no. I mean, it's a probably...
Well, depending on how wealthy you are, but, just say if you're a regular person.
I think we're a necessary evil. People aren't usually happy to come to meet us, but if they need us, they're happy to have the option available.
Yeah, when you get to that, the same as with a person, if you have to have some sort of complex surgery, it's expensive if you don't have the insurance.
Oh, it can be. Yeah, absolutely. There's no denying that.
Yeah. Does it ever happen that people have to make a terrible decision of, I can't afford this, so...
Absolutely. I guess it's all relative to people's situations. There's, if they can't afford it, I guess there are other options. There are alternative treatments that might not be as optimal as we would like to be able to offer. There are compromises. There are cases where on welfare grounds, euthanasia is the unfortunate outcome, but from a welfare point of view, totally justifiable.
Yeah. Is spinal surgery on dogs quite common? Because, they can, often dogs, and sometimes it's the breed, they have particular problems with hips and that kind of thing.
Yeah, more common than you'd probably think. Like in our practice this week, we've already had 3 spinal surgeries. So by Tuesday afternoon.
Crikey.
Yeah.
And is that because the animal would have hurt itself, or just it's some sort of kind of genetic abnormality that are...
Trauma and injuries are less common. So usually, typically these are degenerative problems. So certain breed predispositions, Daxies are the kind of classic. They have degeneration of discs in their back. The disc ruptures and compresses their spinal cord, and they have an excellent chance of recovery with the right treatment. So, outcomes are generally positive.
Yeah. But at the same time, there are certain breeds that you get and it's almost inbuilt so that something might go wrong, or far more likely that it might go wrong.
Certainly, there's a predisposition. So Daxies, French Bulldogs, some other breeds are prone to certain spinal conditions. Other dogs are prone to orthopedic conditions. Other breeds are prone to underlying cardiac diseases or endocrine diseases. So I guess we've selectively bred for problems as well as desirable traits.
They have difficulty breathing. Some breeds that have been selectively bred
sure,
as well,
yeah.
just to make them look cute.
Yeah. The bug eyes and the short noses makes them look like babies.
My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
And if they have, and after spinal surgery, then does the animal have to be kept in place so they're not trying to jump around the place and that kind of stuff?
It all depends on what they've had done. Like, yeah. I suppose the typical decompressive surgeries that we do don't destabilize the spine. So they need to rest, you know, they need time to recuperate and get their comfort back, but they don't need to be wrapped in cotton wool. Like, these dogs go home, and cats, we operated on a cat last week with a spinal compression. They go home, they recuperate, they will often go and meet veterinary physiotherapists or have rehabilitation treatments. Huh. Yeah, so there's a whole other world of medical care there that people don't know a lot about.
How does a vet physiotherapist work, given that you can't communicate directly, yeah, you know, with the dog or cat?
Honestly, they're amazing. Like, they're the veterinary physiotherapists that I've worked with. There's two kind of typical tiers. There would be veterinary nurses or vets who have gone on and done physiotherapy qualifications, and there are chartered physiotherapists from the human world who do additional qualifications to become veterinary physiotherapists. So, you know, that there's amazing options there, and they're very intuitive. They know what they're looking at. They are a massive assistance to people like me who probably don't have the time or the means to do all of the rehab as well as the surgeries.
Yeah. But to get the dog, say, to do the rehab, is how do you get them to do it, given you can't tell them to do it?
I guess they're never hypochondriac. If they feel good, they'll do things, you know, and it's one of the real advantages of working with veterinary patients is if they feel okay, they'll do almost anything. So, like, it's all motivation, reward-based encouragement. Like, if going for a walk or picking up their lead is as much encouragement as they might need to go and do something, and stepping over poles, weaving around a course, you know, doing hydrotherapy in a pool or on a water treadmill, these things all exist. And dogs like attention. You know, if you're interacting with them, they're happy for the most part.
Yeah. Now this is, I suppose, at the lower end, because I didn't know that dogs could get cataracts.
Yeah.
Is that just an age-related condition for dogs? Or?
It can be age-related. There are endocrine conditions like diabetes can cause cataracts in dogs and cats. Treatment is a little bit different to that in people, but I'm not an ophthalmologist, so I'll stay in my lane.
Okay, all right. But, you know, roughly speaking, how does it work to remove a cataract from a dog?
They incise the cornea and remove the opaque lens. Yeah. So, to the best of my knowledge, and as I said, I'm stepping outside my wheelhouse here a little bit, they don't have the same acuity of vision requirements that people do. So lens reimplantation may or may not be necessary.
Okay. How do you even know if your dog has cataracts?
They've got foggy eyes.
Oh, right. Because it's as simple as that, really.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's lots of reasons they can have foggy eyes. Having them assessed by your GP vet or referred on to an ophthalmologist, I guess, is where the definitive diagnosis and discussion about options comes in.
Okay. And you mentioned diabetes as well. How do you know if a dog has diabetes?
I suppose similar issues to what people can experience. There can be significant weight loss, excessive thirst, excessive urination, collapsing episodes if they're having hypoglycemic episodes. So there's a lot of detective work involved in getting to the root of these problems and making a diagnosis. And there's some really amazing specialists around the country doing it every day that I guess people don't see or hear about much.
Yeah. And what would be the cause of that? Is that, again, is that an age-related condition for them?
There's various reasons for it. Some of them can be age-related. Some of them are cancer in origin. You know, you can have benign tumors or malignant tumors that cause fluctuations in hormone levels. Sometimes they can be pituitary dependent, so it can be a tumor in the brain that can predispose them to these conditions. So, yeah, there's a similar kind of pathway to all of these diseases in animals as well as in people.
Are we feeding dogs particularly too much crap?
I guess, yeah. It's I don't know how to be diplomatic in my answer. I think we see lots of dogs that are babied a lot more, and you know, we see lots of overweight patients, I guess, coming to us with orthopedic conditions or spinal problems, and excessive weight plays a part in that. It's certainly something that, you know, you can take the pressure off a diseased joint by maintaining lean body weight, the same for dogs as it would be for a person.
Yeah. But I'm thinking particularly of that scenario, and many people listening will be familiar. It's dinner time and Rover's at your feet whining. and so, you know, you might let them lick your plate at the end or something like that, or drop them. You shouldn't really do that.
I guess in an ideal world, no. But yeah, we all have our vices.
Yes. Well, we do. People have some worse vices than that. Stephen, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today. That was Stephen Martin there. He's a vet and diplomat of the European College of Veterinary Surgeons.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.